Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Mr. Podsworth rides a little motorcycle and he rides it all around town. Mr. Podsworth has a shiny new hat and he never puts it down.
Hello and welcome to Tour of the Think Tank, the show where we come up with five sketch ideas and we are
Andy Matthews and Alistair George William Shumley Bircher.
Oh yes, and I was also humming. We are buzzing.
I also appeared on the...
We are thrumming.
Don't you know who I am? No, wait, not that one. What's the... What's Matt's one?
Who knew it with Matt Stewart?
Who knew it with Matt Stewart?
Wookie Wims.
With Seren and with Claire. And it was a very fun episode and you should at least say. And I appear a lot because I'm very lucky because I live very close and I have an inn with Matt Stewart and I'm very lucky.
You do. And you exploit that.
And while we're promoting things, I also released two episodes of Shusher Guided Meditations.
Very exciting.
U-S-H-E-R Guided Meditations.
And would you say that people can get that wherever they are listening?
They get to podcasts.
Do people still say you could get it on whatever device you're listening to this right now?
Why say that? Oh, no.
People were saying it for a long time, but I don't think they say it anymore.
This podcast is available in a new place where new types of podcasts can be got, which is away from the regular way that you get podcasts, because I'm trying to make it difficult for myself to get an audience.
It's very unlikely that you can get the podcast on whatever you're listening to this right now.
Yes, that's how good a podcast
it is. It's a new format.
Where you get only...
We've released it only on Neil Young's Ponyo. Poyo?
Is that still going? Is Poyo? Ponyo? No,
I don't think so. I don't think so.
But that triangular MP3
doesn't
player?
Fit in your pocket.
Surely it must still be going. How could you release a device like that and then just take it down?
No, I mean, I'm sure the device still exists, but it was like it was a different format, right? And I strongly suspect that they're no longer releasing, you know, updates to the OS or whatever was running.
But
on
that's
there.
The problem with anything which is like just like stream only. You know, like if the company fails, then
it's all gone.
Yeah. Everything goes. Yeah, it sucks. It's the new world where they can just like turn off your Pono is what it was called.
Exactly. It's like I don't keep my memories in my brain, right? Because what if I have a terrible brain accident? Okay, that's why I keep all my memories.
Pad of paper here.
Yeah. Exactly.
Oh no. Just dropped my pen down a very deep crevasse in my couch. Oh, very deep. Oh man. This is what happens when you get... Oh, wait, no. No, that's a fucking Bakugan. Okay. Wait. All right. I will, Andy. I know it's really early to ask you to fill.
No, but there's a great... or maybe not great. I won't oversell it.
What is it?
But there's definitely a sketch idea in... You know, dropping something down a gap in your couch, right? And then having to get on some kind of like elaborate climbing gear, you know, harnesses and that sort of thing, and descend into it like in some sort of caving movie or something like that. Or maybe the movie, was it The Descent, where they go down into a cave and there's all these horrible creatures? I think you going down into the gap between your couch cushions and discovering like hideous, slimy, ravenous beasts that live in the darkness deep, deep down between the cushions, right? You're trying to retrieve your pen.
Yeah.
But in attempting to do this, you end up in a vast, unexplored cavern somewhere deep in the back of the couch.
But you know what would be good?
Chased by beasts.
You know what would be good, though, about those beasts? Is that if they were funny in a way that was relevant to the slovenliness in which the losing the pen in this thing become, you know, is like itself a challenge. So like if for some reason, you know, to beat one of the beasts, you had to write a list of all the things you needed to do that day. And you're like, oh, I'm never going to beat this thing. You know, like,
so you feel like they're, in a way, the creatures are representative of your failings.
I almost lost.
You dropped the pen again.
I almost lost that second pen in the same crevasse.
What like, kind of couch is this?
Well, we were gifted this couch, so it's way better than any couch we could have bought ourselves.
Mm.
And so it's just like just the fancy, big, comfy, like reclinery kind of couch.
Mm.
You've seen it. You've been on it. But it's just like what you don't realize is how outside of my price range it is.
Yeah, I don't think about that enough.
There's 3 zeros at least after whatever number they bought it for.
Yeah, you know? See, that's horrific. It's amazing, isn't it, that for a word that is 4/5 ouch, couch is actually very rarely a painful thing to sit on.
Well, actually, one of the reasons why it was hard to retrieve the pen is because of how painful. Once you go down deep into the crevasse, you're near all the gears and the metal structures.
The gears?
There's gears in there that allow the extension and stuff like that.
I didn't realize that it was the lazy boy. There are moving parts.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
The lazy boying and the lazy girling.
Mm. Sure.
Hey, you know what I was thinking about this a little while ago?
Yeah.
With beasts. Wait.
What does it take to get you to write this fucking thing?
I've written down the lazy, the couch crevasse with beasts to retrieve pen or whatever like that. But it's not developed enough. Let's both admit that.
I completely disagree.
Okay, great. Great, great. I'm glad.
I'm not going to admit
I'm glad someone with a little bit of authority stepped in. I think that's fully fleshed out. Yeah. I was thinking about how sometimes you go, well, I'm not a, you know, I don't necessarily feel like a man, right?
Mm.
And there is that thing, right? But I think, but it's not that whole thing of like, well, toxic masculinity makes you feel like in order to be a man, you got to be gruff and all that kind of stuff. Mm. Is that I actually don't think at the age that I'm at that you are a man. Right?
Yeah.
I think it goes boy,
mm-hmm.
and then eventually it becomes kind of like maybe like early in the late teens it becomes young man, right? And then once you probably hit 28, 29, you probably become just a guy.
Yeah.
Right.
I know exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right. And then when you probably hit your 40s, you're more of a fellow. I think man really occurs in your 50s. It's manhood.
Yeah.
True manhood.
I think do you become a man when people you've grown up with start to sort of, you know, die of old age and stuff?
Well, I mean, at some point you are, you're a codger.
Sure.
You know, I mean, at a codger, everybody's dying. You know, you're happy in a year where not that many of your friends die. You know,
But there's this area, there's this phase when you're a pre-codge. Not to be confused with pre-cog.
No,
the guys
not
who can
pre-cog.
See the future from Minority Report. Pre-codge.
Yeah, pre-codge. That's and yes, you're still laying with your head in a pool with three other of the men of your age. But it's like. But usually,
but
it's
you're
like
in a sort of a baths thing.
It's more of like a sauna kind of your jacuzzi kind of thing where you guys are, you know, going on some kind of, you know, it's a soak. It's more of a soak. You know, to ease your aching muscles.
Yeah, I mean, could you do a sort of a pre-cog parody, right?
Yeah.
With people, instead of being able to... predict accurately crimes that are going to happen in the future, right? It's a bunch of people who, like, sit around with their heads together and talk about how everything's going to all go wrong and everything's a slippery slope, right? Oh, yeah. This is going to lead to trouble. you mark my words, right? They're basically, I'm describing sort of those groups in America who think that, you know, kids' minds are going to be polluted by books at school and that sort of thing, and they're trying to stop children from being exposed to all these terrible ideas like accurate information about history.
Sure, yeah.
This is not a well fleshed out idea, unless.
No, but this was something I was thinking about. There is an age that you reach where you kind of become a foreigner in your own country, because you get stuck in these circles that are not tapped into where the most people are speaking to each other. Because, for example, something like a lot of social media, a lot of the older generation were late to come to that. Right. Mm. And then when they get to it, a lot of the generation, a lot of people move away because they're like, they're here. Right.
Yeah. And it's sort of the opposite of gentrification.
Yeah. They're like, they're laming it up. So anybody who's like got their finger on the pulse moves away because it becomes really lame having to deal with them. And so they move away. And so they don't get to hear what's actually going on. They hear secondhand. And then they say to each other like, oh, apparently you're not allowed to say the word man anymore. Like that. And then they go, don't tell me that.
Yeah.
Oh, I've just gotten used to not being able to say, you know, and then they say some really awful word.
Yeah. Yeah. What is that? Like, it's because they are also the people who always like complain if there are, you know, new migrants coming into the country. They're the ones who are always complaining about these people failing to assimilate, right, and to do things, you know, do the things the way we do them here, right? But also. Like, you're also failing to assimilate, right? Like, you're the ones who are failing to keep up with things that are changing. Like, we're not just going to keep doing things the same forever.
Yeah. That is really interesting that they're not assimilating is a really funny thing. the older generations are failing to assimilate to where the country that they currently live in has moved to.
And they should go back to where they came from. And by that, I mean nothingness, where we all came from.
Where they came from, which is the country that they're in, and then return to where it's at now, which they were never at. It's what's interesting is they've got to go back. It's kind of like going back to the future, essentially, is what they're doing. Except they're going back to the present.
Yeah. But because it's time has moved on.
Yeah.
And they're the ones in the past.
Yeah.
Yeah, beautiful. Is there a sketch idea in that?
Yeah, I mean, it feels like it's almost a sketch idea, but I think it's actually a strong idea.
It's a stand-up angle.
Stand-up angle?
You know.
Like, you know, 90 degrees? Angle
stand-up. Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah.
I've been thinking of some new angles for stand-up.
Yeah. How about this? 135
degrees to the vertical. It's a very novel way of standing up. How long do you honestly think you could perform stand up hanging upside down?
Let's see. I mean, it's already fun, isn't it? We're already having fun. As soon as I'm upside down, everybody's having fun.
I think it is fun.
I guess, now, are you getting clicked into the boots or whatever? You know, it's like one of those devices that can, like, you're sealed in through your boots that are locked in, and then they just spin you upside down like that. Like, do they have to wheel that thing on while they wheel the other guy off?
I think there's probably a couple of strong people in black T-shirts who, when you come onto the stage, they just help you up, right? And get your legs hooked over a bar. I suspect you're dangling from your legs.
But you're just wearing boots, and the boots just hook into the.
For me, I don't think the boots hook in. I think you'll just hook your knees over just a.
Oh, but that's a horizontal bar. That's painful. But you could be upside down without pain.
Okay.
I mean, Andy, you're probably thinking about this being financially viable and us not having to buy any equipment just to get like a chin-up bar or something like that.
Maybe a mat. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. You're like, oh, well, we'll get a cheap chin-up bar. That's what you were thinking.
Already, I think, Alistair, we owe it to ourselves and to the comedy scene to start this comedy night.
Right? Upside down stand-up comedy.
Yeah. The hangar. The, what would you call it? Hangout. Well, the
handstand comedy.
Stand upside down.
Yeah. Wait.
Danglers. Is there a stand-up
Danglers
comedy
does sound like
called...
a name. Does sound yeah. like the name of a comedy club.
I think so. I think that would be very funny. I wonder if it would overshadow your bits, like what the material that you're trying to do. But I wonder also if, like, when you wear those glasses that turn everything you see upside down, whether or not you just adjust, your brain adjusts, and eventually the audience would no longer see you as being a person hanging upside down.
Because of the glasses?
They're not wearing glasses, but there is an experiment that has been done. Do you know about this? Where they put some kind of glasses on people, right, which turned everything that they see upside down.
Yeah.
And it was very disorienting for those people, as you could imagine.
Yeah.
For some time. But then, like, after, I don't know the figure, but after, like, 3-4 days,
yeah,
their brain just flips everything. They no longer see the world as being upside down.
Yeah, I'd heard about that, but I'd heard it as just people had been upside down.
that may be the case as well, but I don't think you could leave somebody dangling upside down for 3 days without them dying.
I probably heard this in primary school. Like, this is how long ago I've heard this. And a lot of psychological experiments have been disproven since, you know, from that era have been disproven since then. But
I think I also heard it in primary school.
Yeah. That's okay. Now,
I think there's a show in that where you, like, you get people to recall things they learned in primary school, but that haven't looked into any of the details of it.
Yeah.
All the urban legends and all the weird little stories kids would tell and stuff, but also, you know, maybe more scientific stuff like this, and you just go through them one by one, get guests on, and you finally look into them. Because there are lots of things that sit uncontested in your brain because they haven't come up for years and years and years, but they just sit there occupying a part of your brain where they're, like, contextually true in your brain. Like, they are still classified as true in your brain because you've never re-examined them.
Yeah, well, I had a guy on a forum when I was in university, my first few years of university, say that in Australia there were no crows, there were only ravens.
Mm.
Right? And so then from that point on, I believe that there were no crows in Australia, only ravens. So any blackbird...
you included this into a stand-up bit, right?
Did I?
I'm pretty sure you had a bit where you talked about there being no crows in Australia.
Wow.
I think it was in the context of correcting your Taiwanese ex-girlfriend. She thought it was a crow. Remember that?
Oh, man, I barely do.
She thought it was a crow. That's how you delivered it.
Yeah, she thought it was a crow. Like that. Yeah. I mean, the hope there, I guess, is that I could
That's right. That's because they were the Western white crow. That's the thing, isn't it? It was your bit about how ravens take care of the elderly.
Yeah.
Like Asian people.
Because she was from Asia.
Yeah.
And may still be from Asia. I don't know. She was from an Asian, the Asian continent. But anyway, and then one day I was at a gig and I said that to somebody and she said, I'm pretty sure there's crows in Australia. I Googled it and it said, oh yeah, there are crows in Australia. I went, God damn.
Yeah.
I've spoken about that a lot.
On stage.
Yeah, yeah. And we need to come up with like a clear sketch idea today because...
All right, okay.
because at the moment we are, because we're not speaking to each other normally. So like right now we're like, we're heading into like real, like, let's just chat with each other and have a nice time kind of territory. We're not here for a nice time.
I want you to know, Alistair, I'm not having a nice time.
Oh, thank God.
So if that, if that puts your mind at ease, I'm not enjoying myself at all. Okay. Don't worry. I'm keeping this strictly professional.
What if everything you knew was wrong?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great like slogan for a movie poster, right?
Yeah.
But they very rarely follow through on that.
They don't follow through with everything. Really?
It's usually only a couple of things, right? Yeah. Like, oh, your parents aren't your parents or something. Yeah, you're like, yeah, okay, but gravity is still down.
Yeah, the government.
You really overhyped this.
Is like an actually like a fascist kind of dictatorship or something like that, right? It doesn't usually involve like stuff like blue is a color, right? And then it's not like, no, blue's not a color. Blue is a vacuum cleaner. And you go, what?
I think this is a really good, I think this is a great trailer for a film. Sketch trailer. Right?
I think this is a great sketch trailer.
With the opening thing of like, what if everything, or like maybe it starts with like, it is a Morpheus type character talking to the lead of the film.
Yeah.
And saying, everything, what if I told you that everything you thought you knew was wrong, right?
This is really good so far, Andy. I'm really excited.
We think it's going to...
We can only fuck this up from this point on.
And then the person's like, go on, you know? What is it the government, right? We're not the good guys in this war or something. And the Morpheus type character is like, yes.
Yes.
And the other person's like, I always knew something was wrong. I always suspected it. What are we going to do? Wait, I haven't finished. I told you everything you thought you knew was wrong.
Well, if you suspected it, then that was wrong. So then we are.
But then we've got to go into the detail
Yeah.
You know, the things like blue is actually a vacuum cleaner. And it's just a list of things like that, right?
Your parents aren't who you think they are.
The peel of the orange is actually the most delicious bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, that kind of stuff.
But I've had it, and it wasn't. That's right. That's right. You were wrong about that.
Haven't had it. You actually haven't had it.
Yeah, and you haven't had it. And another thing.
You think that's air you're breathing now?
That's stupid. That's garlosh you're breathing.
Garlosh.
You're actually breathing garlosh. A lot of it is just it's the wrong name that they have for things.
That's really funny because, like, I mean, if you want everything to be wrong, eventually you're going to run out of ideas. Yeah. It is oxygen and stuff, but it's not called that.
It's not actually called that. Like it's just
not
like
called
two,
oxygen.
Two
it's
oxygen
called
like
gling,
molecules.
Gling,
no,
gling
not two
tea.
Oxygen. Chang Chang and Bulgy. It's one Chang Chang molecule and one Bulgy molecule. But they're the same thing. If you think they are, then they're not.
I mean, the good thing would be that the things that you don't think you know, right?
Yeah.
They don't have to change, right? So when you were then talking about what oxygen molecules and stuff actually are called, they wouldn't have to change what they sort of – how they behave or what they look like because I don't really know. Mm. I don't understand, right? If I analyze it and I think about it, I've got no real picture of what's happening down there.
Yeah, but
– so that's okay. That's safe.
But the thing is that like in order to – for the whole system to be different, because it's hidden from view, and it just, and you base your understanding on it entirely intellectually, and then you match it up to like this just feeling. You know,
it's true.
Like, it feels like it could be so many things still. Like, if somebody told you, like, that sensation of breathing was something else and it was good enough for me to believe, I reckon I could easily believe it.
It is interesting, isn't it, that, like, that feeling is sort of, you know, what we use to fill in. It's sort of packaging. It's sort of mental packaging or something like that. Or ballast or whatever. So like when your intellectual understanding of something ends or where there are gaps, they are sort of filled in with feelings. Yeah. Feeling is the filling. And so you think there's something there, you think there's some understanding or whatever, but if you look at it closely, it's actually just feelings that are there.
Yeah, you just go, oh, well, it feels like my chest is going up. You know, it feels like my chest is expanding, but I don't know. Does that mean that it is? And then I guess
I'm talking more about like emotions or or like an intangible sort of feeling about like what an atom is or something like that. I picture maybe like a texture and a level of squishiness and things that are really just like sensational or emotional associations.
Yeah.
But have no real information.
But there is like, there is things like when you breathe in, it feels good. You know, and when you breathe out, it doesn't necessarily feel bad, but.
Imagine if they could capture that feeling and turn that into a drug. And then you just concentrate that and you're like, oh, I just feel like I took the biggest breath.
Yeah. I mean, in my youth, I've had a substance that made breathing feels even better.
Wow.
You know,
it would actually be really dangerous, wouldn't it, if they could give you a drug that made you feel like you'd been breathing?
you would stop breathing.
What are you talking about? What do you mean I'm choking? I just took the biggest breath.
But I think
my lungs are so full.
I think a lot of the sensation
idea
that you do,
or it's
get.
Like a you know, it could be a weird unit thing or something.
Yeah.
Where somebody has created this drug that makes people think that they've taken a really deep breath when they haven't. And a lot of people are dying, being found dead from just like stopping breathing.
Yeah.
No, they weren't suffocated. They just stopped breathing. They're talking to somebody who is on this stuff, and the person can't talk because there's no oxygen in their lungs. There's nothing in there to breathe out. So they're getting them to write it down on a piece of paper as their brain's shutting down. They're like, no, I'm breathing. Yeah. What are you talking about?
So, yeah, sorry. It both makes you feel like you've taken a breath and really forgetful. Because like,
but I wonder though, like, would you be forgetful? Like,
imagine you felt like you'd taken a breath. Like, so let's say I'm talking like this and I go, man, it feels so good. I'm having such a good time. And then it's just like, I just can't believe how good this thing feels. And I'm just like, and this is like really hard to actually talk to you. And I'm just talking because I just love it. I just love this drug. It's just making me feel so good. And then they pass out, and I imagine when you pass out, you just start breathing.
But I think also breathing could be like a it's an unconscious thing, right?
I got to tell you, it was actually quite hard to do that.
That was very good.
Let's take a
moment and applaud what you just achieved. That was very impressive.
It
was very realistic.
I played the role of that guy because I really didn't take a breath, and I just kept speaking.
Yeah, your method.
I'm so method, Andy. I'm like that guy that everybody hates, who played the Joker and sent the pig heads.
Jared Leto.
Yeah.
Yeah. Be great to go back to Stanislavski, guy who invented that method.
Yeah.
And just tell him a few of the things people have been doing.
And he go, "Oh, fucking assholes."
And then, and he's like, "Yeah, no, that's it." Actually, that is the method, says male used condoms to people. Yeah. It was wasn't really about acting at all to begin with. That was a happy side effect.
Yeah, it was mostly actually a way of me selling used condoms.
Getting rid of my used condoms.
You know, I'm just trying to find a way of monetizing all of the things that I produce.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Indeed.
I saw a good thing
all
today.
My outputs.
I got, who's the guy who made the thing about the sled that had a name?
Orson Welles.
Yeah. I saw an interview with him.
And, had a name.
Somebody asked him, this is a great interview for a guy to say. He says, did you ever give a role to a friend instead of somebody who would have been better for the part? And he said, yes. And he said, have you ever regretted that? And he said, yes. And he said, would you do it again? And he says, absolutely. and he said, why? He says, because I just don't value art as that important. Like, in terms of the things that I value, art is the last thing on the list, right? And I think there's something so good there. Like, I mean, it doesn't match up with the fact that he produced one of the best movies of all time.
Mm.
But also the idea that, like, somebody would think like that and kind of be like, yeah, you can make good stuff. And it won't be as good as it could have been.
Right, but it's not the only thing that matters.
But that doesn't matter because...
Mm.
Because
have you ever tried giving a friend a job and seeing them happy?
Yeah.
Validating somebody's talent who you care about.
Yeah. So I think there was... like, I mean, that was very nice. Now...
Yeah.
Because I feel like there probably is the absolute opposite that occurs, where people get what they feel is the best person for the job. And shun away all their friends and make a piece of shit.
Yeah.
I mean, how many good things are there out there? You know, there's a fair few, but there's a lot where it's like.
But I'm trying to think that, like, you know, I don't know if that comes from getting the person that you think is the best for the job. It probably comes from other compromises. I think, you know, like, I don't think you can blame it on that specifically.
No.
I think that there are,
but
that being said, there is probably a psychology and a single-mindedness required to shun the humanity of the people that you care about, focus only on the outcome of a product, and that single-mindedness will be your undoing in some way and result in work that is not good for other reasons. You know, you will be blind to other important factors. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I love his directness, and that is a really great question.
Yeah.
Right? You don't hear interesting questions all that often.
Yeah, absolutely.
In interviews. It's the, like, tell us about the movie. Were there any fun pranks on set?
What's
it
about?
That'd be a great thing.
Yeah.
We resurrect Orson Welles and we ask him, were there any fun pranks on the set of Citizen Kane? This is what we want to know.
Yeah.
We wrench his undead soul from beyond the veil.
Were there any good outtakes, like sort of bloopers?
Imagine if Citizen Kane also had the best bloopers.
Oh, it makes sense, right? The best movie of all time should have the best bloopers.
There you go. This is the Citizen Kane of blooper reels. It's also the blooper reel of Citizen Kane.
I think it's... I'm writing that down because I just like how stupid it is. wait, it's the citizen. Oh no, I can't write citizen. Citizen.
C I T I.
Yeah.
Z E N.
Of blooper reels.
Mm.
Also, the blooper reel of Citizen Kane. It would be incredible. And an incredible, it's probably the only achievement that he hasn't had.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe just because he didn't have the kahunas to release his blooper reel. Because there's less blooper reels when it's shown on film, isn't there?
What's that?
Like, is there less blooper reels since things have, like, been filmed? Like, is there more blooper reels since digital technology? Feels like you have more ability to make blooper reels.
Yes, you can do so many more takes and that sort of thing.
Or, right? Or is it that when you made bloopers on film, the film is so valuable that you had to find a way to use it in other ways, and that's where blooper reels came from.
Very possibly. And I don't know, and there probably is such a huge volume of takes with digital that it's almost not worth going through them to find that kind of thing, and they aren't memorable because they're just all washed out into nothingness.
Yeah.
Now, I think...
Yeah, go.
I think, like, if we discovered the blooper reel of Citizen Kane and it was the funniest film of all time, right, and it was so funny that it was, in a way, like, dangerous or something like that. It is, you know, there's a bit of an infinite jesty kind of thing potential to it there that, like, to discover this thing, because it's the greatest film of all time, it also has the most hilarious outtakes, and it very possibly does. I mean, have you seen that there are amazing outtakes of Orson Welles doing ads and stuff? Have you seen any of those?
I have seen a little bit of that, but maybe not as much as a conscious adult. I feel like I probably only became conscious in the last year and a half.
I feel like I've made similar bold claims, but that I don't think I was saying in the last year and a half.
No,
that's
I
great,
was joking
though.
There, but there, it probably is like, you know, like, because it does feel like sometimes you do become more conscious as the years go on. You probably become less conscious of some things and more conscious of other things. Because sometimes when you look at old work or whatever and you go, oh, I can't believe I knew that back then.
Yeah. Yeah. I think our consciousness rolls along, and maybe it's that we only have a memory of the self is like the memory of ourselves is only stored in a shorter buffer.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I have gone back and like read and looked at some of my old work and things that I said and wrote a long time ago and been quite surprised that I was that coherent.
Yeah.
And you know, there's also a lot of stuff that is real trash and I'm mortified that I ever thought that was anything. Like, there is a lot of stuff where I'm like, there is absolutely nothing here.
Yeah.
And that I would have had the...
Some of that might be my
stupidity.
Sometimes that might be in my influence because I feel like it's sometimes in order to get to something, you've got to write nonsense.
No, it's not that, Alistair. This is crap I was producing entirely on my own.
Yeah.
I would love to include you in it. I think your influence, if anything, it's been the exact opposite of like ensuring some kind of accountability to the... to there being content.
I just don't
comedy.
Understand how life can continue passing and that you're like, oh, I just want to make stuff. And that actually getting to sit down and make stuff that is like where you work on it until you're happy with it is one of the most difficult things to find the time to do.
Yeah.
Like that a lot of the time it's just like, oh, everything is made to a level of like, you've got to be able to make it within the week. And then just get it out the door. We don't have time. This is like things aren't made to the quality of the best of your ability. They're made to the quality of the best that you can do within 3 days a week. You know, like and then within that time frame. And that feels like completely insane.
Yeah.
Like, you know, sketch shows, all that kind of stuff. Stuff that goes to TV. The idea that you would write it in a week, right? You would write things in a day, send it off, and then somebody looks at it maybe once, right? They go do a couple of edits, and then they film it. You go, that's insane. Mm. You need months to be able to look back at it and go, this is a piece of shit. You need to be able to write things and then be able to go, oh, I had an idea that came back to me 3 months later and I went, this would be the perfect punchline for that.
Yeah, I mean, you almost need to, like they say that you was it our idea or was it somebody else's idea? Probably someone else's idea that you shouldn't give out the Oscars until 10 years later, right?
We did have an idea.
So we should
like
be
that,
doing the Oscars for 2013 now.
Yeah.
Right? But also, maybe you should write, you know, we should be writing it as if it's going out this week, but then at the end of the week, put it away and come back to it in a year and then, you know, do it again and maybe do it again a year later.
As far as like things that you could do that are interesting is doing the 10 years later Oscars and have a 10 years later Academy.
Yeah.
That's a really great idea. And like, I know we've probably already mentioned this year, but like, I feel like we're kind of like connected to enough people now that that's a genuine thing that we could actually organize with a big group of people. And like, we know enough people that actually do things that are involved in like movie reviews and things like that. And we could get a big, you know, like they could probably connect people to a big network of worldwide reviewers. And then put on, and we have a studio where we could put on a ceremony for the 10 years later Oscars.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think Alexi Toliopoulos is probably the person who could make this happen.
Yeah.
He's a one-man academy. Academy, I'm trying to think of a pun for that. It's bold, isn't it? Are they called, they're not just called the Academy, right? They must be called the Academy of something or other.
Oh, the Academy of Film and TV?
Picture.
Motion Picture Academy, is that what it is?
I don't know.
The Motion Capture Academy?
Is that Motion Capture?
No, but do you know Motion Capture?
I know Moshe Kasher, but they should get Moshe Kasher to do motion capture.
I mean, it'd be crazy for the Motion Capture Academy to not get Moshe Kasher to host their thing.
Yeah, I mean, really.
It's the same way that
guy?
The Oscars
who's that
always
fucking
get
guy,
a guy
who does all the monkeys. You know.
Yeah. Monkey
the,
man.
That
yeah.
little guy.
Little monkey man who's like a very serious actor. I love how serious an actor that he tries to portray himself as.
I know.
It's like, yes, you're an actor, blah, blah, blah. Like, I know, everybody takes you seriously. But also, you crawl down on the ground and go, yes! It's different.
Pretend to eat a fish or something like that.
You pretend. You mind.
You sort of squirm around, don't you? And you get jump up onto green boxes and stuff, don't you?
It's different, though, isn't it? It's not the same.
Andy. He's called Andy Serkis.
Andy Serkis, yeah.
It's ridiculous, isn't it, that you're like, we need a guy to pretend to be an animal. do we know anyone called Serkis?
We need a man to play an ape in Primate of the Apes. Sorry, Planet of the Apes. They should have called it Primate of the Apes.
That would have been really good. Primate of the Apes. Yeah, they should have called it that, shouldn't they? And they should have called Andy Serkis Moshe Kasher.
It would have been really good. Or even better, Motion Capture.
That is a lot better, actually.
They should have called it Motion Capture of the Apes.
Or they could have called Motion Capture Andy Serkis.
That's really good.
Those apes. Imagine if he changes his name to Motion Capture, right? Andy Serkis changes his name to Motion Capture. He discovers on the exact same day the people have decided to change the name of Motion Capture to Andy Serkis.
Oh, no.
You'd be devastated.
I know. Yeah. how embarrassing. Just as he thought that he had played them, they were always one step ahead.
Yeah, I thought it was a coincidence.
No, it was the motion.
It was just an unfortunate coincidence.
I just like chess players. Oh, no. We should have filled their motion capture academy with people who did motion capture rather than all these chess masters. Grand.
Something that you talked about, I believe, on your latest episode of Who Knew It with Matt Stewart was something about performing comedy to multiple rooms. It was like instead of audiences,
it's just like
sort of audience members, it's rooms or something like that.
Yeah.
But I was thinking a great thing to do would be to do like Garry Kasparov playing, you know, 50 games of chess simultaneously.
Yeah.
You're performing to all these different rooms simultaneously, right?
You're having to remember all the people that are in each one and try to remember
Exactly, all your crowd work and stuff that you're doing, and you're going, you're sort of running from room to room, but like Garry Kasparov, you're killing in every room, right?
And like the thing is that you're just doing one joke and then moving on.
Yeah, but yeah. But the laughter is, you got that laughter roll, you get that rolling laugh. You've got time to run around, do all the other rooms. You get back, we're just at the exact right moment as the laugh is sort of petering out, hit him again with a tag, on you go to the next room.
I like that one time, like Garry Kasparov.
But also, I think truly great chess players can play games entirely in their head, right? They hold their whole picture of the board in their head. They don't need to play it physically in reality. And I think the greatest comedians probably are capable of the same thing. They just sit there in a chair, imagining the room and crushing.
Yeah. I have on occasion, done visualization where I'm like, I'm doing rooms.
Really?
And I've as I'm falling asleep sometimes, I've kind of gone like, and I don't know why, like this is a room in Melbourne for people who are listening, but I always picture it being Spleen.
Yeah.
And I always come out at Spleen. And then it's like, I think as a way of like picturing like opening lines is like really interesting. But also this same room has appeared in like dreams where I'm doing stand-up and it goes real bad and things like that. Like, it's just kind of a perfect, for me, I think it's like a perfect kind of comedy room because it's like, it's not a professional comedy room, but it's a perfect example of what comedy is when you are just doing like rooms.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
But it has a reputation, right? It's still something to aspire to, I think, performing there for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Maybe not for you, Alistair. You might be beyond that.
I like doing it there. It's a it's something I aspire to even when I'm not, when I know that's something I can access.
Yeah.
Anyway, look, we probably have 5 ideas. A lot of them are not quite ideas, but
I think we should move on.
I think we should go to 3 words from a listener. And today's listener, Andy, is Alex Lloyd.
Alex Lloyd. Incredible. Lloydster.
Now, I don't think that we've done these words before, but they were interesting. They're very interesting words, Andy.
Okay.
You know,
it's a bit of a clue.
Do you want to try to
giveaway?
Guess what they may be?
Okay, interesting words. Okay. The first word is glub.
Glub? What does that mean, Andy? Glub. What does glub mean?
It's just the sound that you make as you drown, I suppose.
Yeah, to glub. I glubbed into nothingness. My consciousness glubbed away into nothingness. That is incorrect, unfortunately. It's a great word, though, in almost its own sketch idea. But, unfortunately, the first one is schadenfreude, which I experience while you failed to get that.
Sure, I bet you felt real lofty.
Actually, the whole point of you guessing words is Schadenfreude. I get so much joy at you not getting this right. It's the whole reason that we get
the
we
do this. The second word is Messerschmitt.
You know what? You are wrong, but you. But I appreciate you hidden staying in the kind of German section.
Yeah, okay.
The second word is Slobberknocker.
Schadenfreude, Slobberknocker.
Now, what is a Slobberknocker? I have not looked it up.
Okay, a Slobberknocker.
Do you know what a Slobberknocker is?
I really don't, but it sounds like somebody who would walk up and down the aisles of a church poking people who have fallen asleep and are drooling on their own shoulder.
Right. Well, a Slobberknocker, according to Wiktionary, is a violent collision experienced by a person. You know, so like a violent physical confrontation that was a real slobber knocker of a football game.
Yeah, sure.
You know, and then the third word. Do you want to try and guess what that is?
Schadenfreude, slobber knocker.
Sorry. I was like, oh, that sounds, it sounded like you were on the money, but then you were just repeating the words.
Okay, I think it's going to be an interesting S word.
Yeah.
Slipovitz.
Slipovitz? Did you... I mean, I appreciate you guessing something that doesn't exist, right?
That is, I'm pretty sure that's a... Or is it Slivovitz? What is that? There's some fancy vodka or something like that called that.
Well, it's a great guess. Unfortunately, it's shenanigans.
Sure, Schadenfreude, yeah. Slobberknocker, shenanigans.
Yeah. Schadenfreude, shenanigans. Slobberknocker.
Shenanigans are shenanigans legal, right? Like, it feels like if you're doing shenanigans, it's probably not illegal.
Yeah.
Shenanigans is just a bit of fun.
Yeah, but they are on the other side of the moral acceptability, but...
Yes.
Because, you know, or else what is it, right? It's not a shenanigan. Mm. You can't be like, oh, we had some shenanigans today. We went to church and we fed the poor.
Yeah. No. Shenanigans.
Shenanigans, you're like, we went to church and we took a little bit
fed
of...
fed the poor into a wood chipper.
Yeah, yeah. We took a little bit of the sort of the money that they give to the church and we fed the poor into a... to an even poorer person. I mean, that almost feels like it's moral, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, it's easy to say eat the rich. You know, that's a common catchphrase for the, you know, the socially minded. But we're all rich compared to somebody.
Well, that's right. I guess is it is it more ethical to feed a poor person to a poorer person, or is it more ethical to feed a poorer person to a poor person? Because to the poorer person, it's kind of eating a poor person, that's kind of eating the rich.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's eating somebody who's of better means, and therefore they, you know, it seems like they have a moral higher ground. But then the poorer person is also suffering more. And so when the poor person eats the poor person, they are, easing them of their suffering. They're easing them of more suffering.
They could also ease them of their suffering by being eaten by the poorer person, right? So I think if we're looking for the truly moral course, it is for the to feed the poor to the poorest.
Yeah. It actually isn't okay to eat the rich. You should be eating the poor, but as only as long as you are very, very poor.
I have been thinking recently, and I don't want this to be misinterpreted by any authorities that are listening. I have been thinking recently that probably we do need to start killing some of the very rich people.
Andy, we've all been thinking that for a long time.
Yeah.
And that's because it's the only way that you can get the distribution of wealth.
I think their money, I'm happy for their money to just disappear, right? To go with them. I just think they are causing a lot of problems. They're using up a lot of resources. They're making the world demonstrably worse, and they're destroying the environment.
Sure, sure, sure.
And I think
that text message you just got, was it from the authorities?
I didn't get a text message.
Well, did I get a text message? Oh, it must have been me. Oh, it must have happened in the... Okay, I just got a text message and I heard it and I thought everybody would have heard it, but it must have been on my phone. And it is from the authorities. Mm. They said, I have to send that jolt of electricity through the podcast telecommunication device in order to knock you out now because you're becoming too self-aware.
What is it? Schadenfreude. Slobberknocker shenanigans. Schadenfreude, so taking joy in the suffering of others. Yeah. Slobberknocker, being hit hard in the face, and shenanigans, being a bit of derring do, a bit of jiggery pokery.
Yeah.
A bit of. are there any synonyms for shenanigans that aren't themselves stupid words?
Yeah, it's hard, isn't it? I mean, we got shenanigans, but is there he-nanigans? That's stupid.
A bit of he-nanigans.
He-nanigans. it's always the shenanigans that are considered negative. I think...
She and Nana are both in there.
I mean,
gin, which is a very womanly drink.
Yes, I'm actually having some gin tonight. Shenana gin. Okay, wait, we got Schadenfreude. So it's feeling good about bad things happening to people. We got people who are having bad things happen to them in which collisions are occurring, right? And then we have shenanigans. Now, it sounds like we're talking about some kind of reality show here, right?
Shenanigans is a great name for a reality show.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay, so we get 15 people. They're locked in a something.
Right. I mean, what about 15 people and their objective is to create as much trouble as they can without breaking the law, right?
Yeah.
I mean, is that just sort of standard prank shows? Is that basically what Balls of Steel is? I'm not sure.
I don't know. Like, I don't think Balls of Steel is well enough known or was anything. All I remember from Balls of Steel was that a guy was dressed up as the devil.
Now, see, now that's...
Doesn't feel like anything, does it?
Okay, so, but you've got to, and I'm not sure, like, what the metric is here. Like, perhaps you want people to call the authorities on you, to call the police, to dob you in, but when the police come, they say, well, he's not technically doing anything wrong. We can't actually.
So if somebody calls the authorities on you, and each person has the ability to call the authorities on the other person, and if they call the authorities and the other person hasn't done anything illegal.
Oh, it's really good.
Then you're out.
Yes. So you're trying to create the impression that you are committing crimes
law. So causing the impression that you're committing crimes. So you're like smoking cigarettes within like 20 meters of a hospital. This is always my example of people committing a crime. Right. You're trying to do things that look illegal, but they're not.
Mm.
And so what do you do in preparation for it is you study the law.
And, you know, maybe you make it look like you're smoking, but actually you just inhaled a whole lot of flour dust or something earlier, and it's just in your lungs, and you're just coughing it out, right? But the cigarette's not lit.
You look like you're actually masturbating in public. Because, like, what's
that's not actually your penis. No. That's somebody else's penis that you've... A severed penis that you've got in your pants.
I think having a severed penis that you're flogging off in public.
Might still be.
Like, because you're probably not allowed to manipulate the dead body parts of another person.
Be a very interesting loophole. What if the person's not dead? They might not be dead.
That's really good.
It's a loophole.
Strategy involved in this game. Look, do you feel like this is a good enough reality show?
Absolutely, this is a sketch idea, Alistair.
What's it called?
A classic sketch idea. It's called Shenanigans. There's the Schadenfreude elements in there. Slobberknocker, less so, slightly less so, but...
not illegal. It's hard to write this in the place where I'm writing it, but...
Wheel of Misfortune.
There you go.
That could be...
It's the opposite of Wheel of Fortune. You've got some letters. No, you've got some empty tiles. And you want to be able to get a wheel.
It's Wheel of Fortune, but instead of existing phrases that you've got to guess, you've got to coin new ones.
You've got to coin a new phrase that everybody agrees is a good phrase.
Yeah.
And you've got the letters up on the board, P, Z, T, L.
They're existing letters that you've got to work with it as well. Yeah. That's amazing.
Patel-les-gle. But you got to just keep adding letters until it becomes a phrase that...
Yeah.
And then the person who turns it into a phrase that has some meaning... Potato, rind,
zaps. Graham.
Oh, sorry, that's gobbledygook.
All right, Alistair, we should go.
Okay, sketch
sorry,
ideas.
I've been pretty useless today.
I have also been useless. I think we're okay. A couch crevice with a beast to retrieve pen. With beasts to retrieve pens. So you kind of remember what that idea is. Then we have older, I'm in the dark at the moment, so I've got to try to read this. Older generations needing to go back to where they come from to fit in with the current society. But assimilate is the key word there. Assimilate. Then we go, what if everything you know was wrong? Trailer.
But I do mean
Morpheus
everything.
Morpheus type character. We have guy creates a drug that makes them feel like they have taken a breath. Then we have the citizen Kane of blooper reels and also the blooper reel of Citizen Kane. One of the truly greatest things ever made. The 10 years...
I feel
years,
like there probably is... it's very possible there is a drug out there that... Or like there is a chemical or something that you could isolate that would make people think that they'd taken a breath.
Yeah,
it feels almost realistic.
It feels pretty realistic. It's it'd feel like the best breath you've ever had.
Oh.
It'll also be the last one because it's your last. And then we have the performing to 50 rooms at a time, like Garry Kasparov. And then we have feed the poor to the poorer. I think that's an idea already because it is ethical. That's right. Feeding the poor to the poorer is ethical. And then we have Shenanigans, the TV show, in brackets, not illegal.
And then we have the opposite of Wheel of Fortune, it's Wheel of Fortune, but it's like all the contestants are like Oscar Wilde, Mark Twain, and Dorothy Parker, and they're all trying to coin new phrases. You don't need to write that down.
But you have to coin new phrases.
Yes.
Andy, we did it. That's another episode.
My God. Another ripper.
Another ripper episode.
Another bang, bang, banger.
A bang, bang, banger. Here we go into the song bong, shikadong dong, giddy giddy bong bong, shikadong dong, ting tang tong, ting a tang tong, into the bing bang, flip flop.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to Two in the Think Tank.
Oh my gosh. Thank you for listening to the Two in the Think Tank. If this is your first episode, where have you been all our lives?
Where you been all your life?
Where have you been all your life? It's hard to remember, isn't it? You forget most of your life. But if you check your Google history, you can see where some of the parts, when you've had your location services activated, you can get records of where you've been. And it actually makes it kind of easier to remember where you were on that day and what you did.
That'll be handy if I ever have to write an autobiography.
Yes.
It won't be interesting.
Is that when you write a biography about a car?
I'll be able to describe, fucking hell. Oh, we're just heating up now, Andy, now we're just getting good.
It's the end of the episode.
Oh, neither can the listeners.
Oh, no. That's called an autobiography. Why do I have to write it? Sounds like it should just happen.
Should write itself.
Yeah. Jesus Christ. Andy, it's so awful to have to end the episode now when we're just fucking firing.
Right. And
you know, that's what we do. We love. Wait, I've got to just get you. Bye. Thank you so much.